Remember, as we are looking at the book of Ecclesiastes, remember that King Solomon was equipped as none other in wisdom, to say the least. And I would remind you, we need to keep in mind that the Solomon, a Hebrew, is going to look at everything from the standpoint of God. So the starting point of any thought, word, or deed, event, you start with God, in the beginning God. And thus you look at everything from the vantage point that God is, and that's where your starting point is. So then you aren't looking for why something or where it came from. You just understand God created the heavens and the earth, and you're working from that standpoint. The world, Gentile world, works from the standpoint trying to, here we are, we find ourselves born on planet Earth, wherever we're born, and we try to figure out, as everyone else is ahead of us, why we're here, why we're located, what we're doing, why we're doing, and we try to figure out origins, and evolution comes in, and we're trying to put things together, and our whole life is trying to reason out, analyze, think through what's happening, why it happens, why did it happen to me, etc. And so the world's looking that way without God. So without God, you have no starting point and nowhere to run to get to. So here in Ecclesiastes, God is helping us using Solomon. And Solomon, in his foolishness, seeks to gain by wisdom, by understanding, by ability, having all, nothing was lacking in his life, physically, materially, nothing, no privileges, he had everything. And he saw it in his folly to try to answer, what can I have all, can I have everything without God? Can I be everything and have everything without God? And he saw the Gentile world around him. So now he's going to, in his humanness, folly, he does that. He does it very wisely, and he does it very, very sufficiently, because he has every means to every piece of material to do whatever he needs to do. So when we share together, he exercised his education, which was very, very unique. And in chapter 2, we share together the entertainment, remember? And that we found in verse 1, that pleasure is vain. And in verse 2, laughter is vain. Verse 3, drunken mirth, trying to get drunk, drugs or something else, to get happy is vain, vain, short-lived, has no value, no satisfaction, it doesn't answer one thing. So when we come now to chapter 2, verse 4, we share together, he tries materialism, not just entertainment, he now tries materialism, and that's why he built and built and gorgeously, wonderfully built buildings, had everything to do it with. And when you come to chapter 2 and verse 4, you have his great experiment in verses 4 through 10, and he lists all the things that he did. And he had a great zoo, a great everything. Now, in the process of that, then the conclusion of this materialism, building, having possessions, in verse 11, then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity, emptiness, fruitlessness, and vexation. Vexation is chasing the wind. Vexation of spirit, chasing the wind. Wind, it's a silly thing to chase the wind. You can never catch it. And there was no profit under the sun. So I tried entertainment, I tried materialism, and I tried gaking my... if I just exercise wisdom better. And so I come to verse 12, etc., and he seeks to make and exercise his wisdom. Maybe if I think about things, it would be better. So now I come to verse 14, remember, when he's looking. And in verse 14 and 15 and 16, he goes on to say, well, I read part of it, I guess. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. I myself perceive. Also that one event happeneth to them all, whether you were rich and wise, whether you were poor, whether you were foolish, everyone dies. So no matter what, no matter who, no matter where, no matter when, everyone dies. They all end up in the ground. So whatever they had for a little moment of history, they end up in the ground. So what was the point? No matter what you sought after, had, possessed, it disappeared. And thus in verse 15, then said I in my heart is, you keep reading that, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. Here I am with all my wisdom, and I watch the fool, and the fool ends up, going to end up the same as I am. It happeneth to me, and why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart that this also is vanity. Wherefore there is no remembrance of the wise man more than of the fool forever, seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten, and how dieth the wise man as the fool. How dieth the wise man? Just as the fool. So everything disappears, goes away, and isn't around. What a silly thing it is. So foolish is it all. And now, just holding on, hold your finger there a moment. Let me give you a little illustration to help on that. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. So you can see it from another window. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And you'll pick up, if I can, I'm going to go to verse 17. Christ sent me not to baptize, but to preach the gospel, not with wisdom of words, lest the cross of Christ should be made of none effect. For the preaching of the cross is to them that perish, perishing, dying, foolishness. But unto us which are saved is the power of God. So here we're looking at the world, the one man, we all end up dying, and the fool and the wise man, well, what's the point of it? It's all foolishness. But the trouble is, if we don't answer, if we don't go from the foolishness of trying to do it without God, then we're going to look to God. If we try to do it, looking at the things around us and try to make that world work for us, then we aren't going to go and look to God. And if we don't go and look to God, then we become a fool of fools. So now in verse 19, for it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise. I will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? So here we are trying to answer and analyze, and it's vain and vexation of spirit. For after that the wisdom of God, verse 23, the world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. For the Jews require a sign, the Greeks seek after wisdom. See, we're looking. One is a sign, are you the right one? And the Gentiles are looking out to say, well, that doesn't make sense to die on the cross. Why is that necessary? So verse 24, but unto them which are called, both Jews and Greeks, doesn't matter either way you look at it, whether you're a Jew or a Gentile, Christ the power of God, and he's the wisdom of God, because the foolishness of God, verse 25, is wiser than man. And the weakness of God is stronger than man. And so here's man. Now keep that in mind. The foolishness of God is wiser than man. So man is trying to make it all work. So as you're reading now and picking up the mood movement, you'll catch this. The world's trying to do it without God. And nothing's going to work. Thus, we go to chapter 2, and we were there in verse 17, etc. and the foolishness of a son. A son inherits the wise man's portion, and a foolish son does so. Verse 17 through 19, a foolish son does that. When you come to verse 20, we have a lazy man inherits the wise man's portion. And when I went about to cause my heart to, therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in or with equity, that means success. Yet to a man that hath not labored, therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and great evil. In other words, here's the lazy, the foolish son gets something he doesn't care, doesn't appreciate, and a lazy man gets something he doesn't appreciate. And so when you're all done doing your very, 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 very best, what's going to happen to your very, very best? That's the question. You did your very, very best, got everything, did everything, you raised up castle, yachts. Now what? Now what have you got? You're gone, because there's no difference between the fool and the wise man. They all die. So now what happens? Well, either the family gets it and they don't know what to do with it, or the people get it and they don't care about it, don't appreciate it, usually. So verse 22, the wise man receives travail from the world. So here's the wise man looking, and I would remind you, in the process here, that Rehoboam, that's the son of Solomon. Remember, Solomon has a son that's a fool, to illustrate it. And Rehoboam was 41 years old when Solomon died. And Solomon didn't know whether he'd be a fool or not, but here he is. He comes out. Rehoboam proves himself to be a fool. And thus you come, if I can, over to verse 22. Remember now that everyone does whatever they do, and when you're all done, you have to leave every possession, every position to somebody else. So then what happens? What did you accomplish? Thus, verse 22, for what hath man of all his labor and of the vexation of heart, of his heart, wherein he hath labored under the sun? For what has man for all his toil and for the strivings of his mind, which he has done? And so there's the challenge. That's the challenge. What is there? Verse 22 is, I'm going to read verse 22. I'll read it in order if I can. The challenge, verse 22, for what hath man of all his labor and vexation of heart, wherein he hath labored under the sun? The answer, for all his days are sorrows, and hath travailed grief, and his travail grief, yea, in his heart taketh not rest in the night. This is vanity. There is no relief. And thus the grand conclusion, verse 24. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God. God allowed all of this to happen. God allows all of the one, he has your taste buds, your brain to think, to create, to do all kinds of things. Man is, in our day, has illustrated the brain power of Adam and Eve in progressively developing. So here we are with all of these wonderful, wonderful benefits, etc., of mind and heart and body magnificently done and made. And when we have them all, here we are. And God gives them. God gives them. We read it in 1 Timothy 6, etc. God gives us all things to enjoy. God made it so that you could enjoy it. Otherwise, you would have had a tongue with no taste buds, and you just shove food down. And what value would be food if you couldn't taste it? Think about it. If you couldn't taste the food, what's the difference whether you put in a cooked carrot or a banana skin or whatever? I mean, you know, down it goes. You can't taste. So, what do you say? Well, God made it all. God made it all. Wonderfully, wonderfully so. Now in the light of that, and all of it is from the hand of God. There's no question. You can't eliminate God. God did all this from the hand of God. So when I come now, when it's all done, where is satisfaction? Well, God gives us all of these things, and in all of them, for who can eat? Verse 25, we may as well talk about eating. We just did it, eating and drinking, verse 24. So let's continue, verse 25. For who can eat, or who else can hasten hereunto more than I? In other words, if I as a king, having all wealth, enough everything, I can have anything I want to eat or drink. I have the best chefs, the best cooks, the best meat, the best food, the best vegetables. If I have all of that, and it doesn't satisfy, it isn't sufficient, then who else is there that's going to bring up food and drink when I have everything and I'm telling you it isn't worth it? What do you mean? Well, when you have everything under the sun, you have all that there is to have, when you have all of that. And without God, that's all you've got. Thus, verse 26, for God giveth to a man, that is good, in his sight, wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to reap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. When you're all done, whether on the right side or the wrong side, the good side, the bad side, whether you have a lot to eat or you don't have a lot to eat, you have all the advantages of whatever you want to use, call advantages, education, food, material things. When you're all done, and the other person doesn't have anything, when you're all done, verse 26, the end, conclusion, this also is vanity and vexation of spirit. It's chasing the wind. When each part of life, you do your very best you can with it, you do the very best you can, you get whatever happiness you can out of the ordinary acts of life, in the light of all of it, is from the hand of God. But if God's out, you have vanity and vexation of spirit. When you used all your abilities and all your taste buds and all your powers and all your mind and all your brilliance and all your possessions, when you were all done, when you were all done with it all, you end up vanity, vexation of spirit. When you're all done, you eat and you need to eat again. And you eat again. And you eat again. And over and over and over the cycle goes. Now, having said that, the cycle, now chapter 3. Remember, each part of life comes with the negative and the positive. Each part of life has one side of the coin and the other side of the coin. That's life. Called life on planet Earth, all right? And so here we are looking at life on planet Earth, and in the midst of all the ordinary things of life, the acts of life, we try to get the best we can humanly, but if we left God out, it's actually vanity and vexation. There's no satisfaction, vexation of spirit. Thus we come to chapter 3, And all things, remember now in chapter 3, verses 1 through 8, everything, you know, you're familiar with it, all things proceed from a fixed and settled line, order. Everything has order to it. Everything is balanced. One side, good, bad, friend, foe, everything is balanced. Under the sun. So here's this. 4 points, or 28, 7 verses, 28 items, 4 points, 28 items, 7 verses, and thus 28 items. And here's the conclusion. So we're going to look now and put that together. We're going to say, what difference does it make whether you had a lot or little? All is vanity and vexation of spirit. So now you come to verse chapter 3, and in verse 1, to everything there is a season and a time. And you would hold your finger here just a moment and remind yourself. Over to Psalm 31. So you keep that in focus. Psalm 31. You ready? You need to do it, so if you really want to put it together. Now, you ready? Verse let me go, please, over to verse 14. But I trusted in thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my God. In the light of being my Lord and God, my times are in thy hand. Deliver me from the hands of mine enemies and from them that persecute me, etc., etc., etc. Make thy face to shine upon thy servants. Save me for thy mercy's sake. Back to verse 15. My times are in your hand, God. You got that? So the believing heart, looking to God, Hebrew, Jew, looking to God, my times are in your hand. Now, chapter 3. And would you allow me to pick up, and remember now, here's these 28 items. My times are in thy hand. Verse 1, to everything there is a season and a time, there's your word, to every purpose under heaven. So everything balances out in the light of creation, light of sin, etc. In other words, God could have made sin catastrophe totally, and you would have had never the taste buds or anything. God could have just wiped out and just gone. God left it. Sin, it would have been all good. But sin came along and made bad. God didn't eliminate the good. God left the bad. God made the bad that sin made to go with the good, and they aren't going to go away. Thus, you're going to read, it's wonderful, easy to get. There's a time to be born. You all understand that. You got that part? Time to be born. And there's a time to die. You haven't got that part yet, but when you do, it'll be too late to ask you. There's a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up, a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance. Remember, dancing isn't what you want to think dancing is. It means to leap for joy like David did, be all excited about the ark coming into Jerusalem. Thus, in verse 5, a time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing. There's a time to hug, a time not to hug. Don't do it then. A time. So we come. A time to get, a time to lose. And loss helps us find things. A time to keep and a time to cast it away. A time to rent and a time to sew. It gets torn, you sew it back up. And some things you have to throw away. A time. A time to keep silence, a time to speak. Verse 8, a time to love. A time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? Here we are looking at all these. When you're all done, you want to think of the profit and loss, if you would, column. There's 14 credits and 14 debits. And you're born, you die. You get, you lose. Everything, you get everything. 1 minute you got it, next minute you don't have it. So profit and loss, when you're all done, you add up the 14. 14 pluses, 14 minuses equal zero. Zero. When you're all done, you have zero. Vanity. Vexation. Chasing the wind. You don't end up with anything when you're all done. What profit is there? And over chapter 7, if you would just for a moment, you know it. Chapter 7 and verse 14. If we're going to intermingle good and evil, how are we going to tell? How are we going to tell the future? How are we going to know the answers? Chapter 7, verse 14. In the day of prosperity, be joyful. In the day of adversity, consider. God hath set the one over against the other, to the end that man should find nothing after him. God, why did you allow? Well, if sin hadn't come in, you would have had a ever-developing relationship to me. But sin came in, and I could have just eliminated it all, but I didn't. I was going to show my grace and mercy and kindness by sending my Son, whom the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness. And I sent my Son, and I want you to know that apart, if you try to be and leave me out, God, leave God out, then you can't answer anything. Because there's a time to get and a time to lose. And when you're all done, you'll never be satisfied. It's totally impossible. Who made it that way? God said, I did. I made it that way. Why? So that you'd have to look to me. And if you're smart enough and you get old enough and you get wise enough and you have enough problems in your life, you start looking to God early on, I hope, to learn. Now, having said that, back over to chapter 3. Now remember, for every plus, there's the equal and opposite minus. And we try very much to avoid the unavoidable. True? You don't want to die, but apart from the Lord's coming, you're what? You're dying. We try to avoid the unavoidable. We try to escape the inescapable. We can't escape. But we try to escape. But you can't escape. Why can't I just, had enough money and went down, I could go to NASA or something, get a ride in one of those vehicles. Didn't they once say they wanted to go to Mars and stuff? And hey, that would solve it, wouldn't it? Get on that thing and sail out to Mars, right? Never come back, but that's all right. Off you go. And you're going to escape, right? Wow. You don't escape because you carried the pluses and minuses with you. You carry them. Your time to born, time to die, time to get, a time to lose, etc. Now, and your body will fail, isn't it? Isn't that what's going to happen to you? Not most of you won't have that, probably, but don't some of you ever have a body that gets older? And when it gets older, doesn't it get lose something? Do you remember when you were 15? No. Is your body like it was when it was 15? Maybe it's better. I don't know. You want medicine to what? What's the purpose of medicine? To make you better than the original, right? Isn't that what you go to the doctor for? And you tell the doctor, fix me, make me better than the original. You know, and the doctor looks at you, you know. Don't say that to a doctor, by the way. Don't say that. He won't help. He don't like that. Make me better than the original. I had a doctor say to me, make you better than God did. I said, no, you can't make me better than God did. Thus if I can, chapter 3, verse 10. I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. Now, I have seen this. In the light of verse 9, what profit is there? I have seen all. I have had wonderful, wonderful advantage of understanding humans and their life, the ease and the hardship. Now, verse 11. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. God hath made everything beautiful in his time. And the word beautiful, remember, has to do with shining, shining, shining. Has to do with being useful. For great advantage. God hath made everything beautiful in his time, and he hath set the world, the word world is eternity. God has put eternity in their heart. So here we are in the middle of everything. Everything has a use, rhyme, reason. We just went through the list a little bit. And here we are in the middle of that, and God says, now I put in the middle of your being eternity, the understanding, the capacity to house the infinite God who created you. Now, I want you to see the foolishness of trying to satisfy that your heart with anything that I've created. That's why God, remember we did the other day, if God were to give you the whole world, what on earth would you have gained? You have the capacity for God. And therefore, that's why religion exists, doesn't it? Religion has to answer this void. Religion does. Somehow answer the void of the heart. And we can't answer it because there's nothing in life. Religion never answers it. Religion in a zillion years can't answer it, can it? How can religion answer it? Is it a big Buddha, a big pot-bellied Buddha, you're going to bend down? What's he going to do? You know, I don't know what he's going to do. What's any of them going to do? A philosophy. Is atheism going to do it? Let's be an atheist. What are you going to accomplish? Let's be an agnostic. Which you can't be, but you can say you are. Because you don't know everything. The only way you could be an agnostic is said, I have proven that I know everything there is to know, and I prove there's no God. Well, then you'd have to know all the knowledge in the Library of Congress, you know, with all of its millions of volumes, and you can't even go in the, probably, most, well, probably many of you can, take all of the Encyclopedia Britannica and put all of those volumes out and say, I know everything in those volumes. Could you do that? I know everything in those volumes. Let alone anything else. See, how come we're going to say we're agnostic? We don't know anything. We don't know anything. That's what a starting point is. Wonderful starting point. But it took you to read Encyclopedia Britannica to discover you didn't know anything, right? How did you know you didn't know so little until you started turning the pages and said, I never knew that. I never knew that. I didn't understand that, you see. Now, having said that, God put eternity in the heart so that there's no way to satisfy the human soul apart from God. So if you leave God out, there's no way to put anything in to substitute. There's no way to fix, change, alter. Can't do it. So that, the end of verse 11, middle, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. And so, no matter what you do, profit, loss, live, die, have, lose, whatever you do, when you're all done keeping score, when you're all done trying to have it today, lose it tomorrow, get it next week, have it the week after, when you're all done doing everything you can, children, you have children encouraging, etc., and they're a marvel to have. And then they're a misery to have. Children. Wow. It's true. You know, you say, I don't feel that way. Well, wait till they're older. Let them get older. Then we'll listen to you, you know. We'll talk to you then, you know. We'll listen. Say, well, I'm going to do it. Come on. I've never seen anyone do it. God does it. God can do it. Wow. And anyway, Ecclesiastes, verse 12. I know, what do you know? I know that there is no good in them but for a man to rejoice and to do good in this life. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor, for it is the gift of God. Now, when you're all done, we're back. He keeps going over it, banging it home, so you get it. Verse 14. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing shall be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it, that men should fear before him. And so, God, you have made it so that we never can seem to get the pieces. We never, remember we read it earlier, that God leaves, there's things you know, and there's things that God made it, so you'll never know. There's no way to know. Oh, I want an answer. You'll never get an answer, because God didn't make it possible to get an answer. So we're stuck when we get answers, and then we don't get answers, and we need pieces, and God doesn't give us those pieces. So we're stuck. We're stuck in trying to get it together. So when you come to chapter verse 15, that which is pursued, that which is driven away, the past, that which hath been is now, and that which is to be hath already been. And God requireth that which is past. Here we are. Here's all the past that we have, all the events, and all of last week is going to chase you this week. And you're going to repeat it again, aren't you? Aren't you going to sleep, eat, drink, pursue your life? And you're going to repeat it all over again. And we had an illustration for what it's worth. to remind you, in the process of things, remember, God expects you to grow. Here's the intensity, degree of growth. Here's the timeline. And God expects growth just like this. Now, what do we know? Well, we know humanity is already programmed, especially modern industrial world humanity, trying to be global. And in the process, we try to get through school and the third grade, we're excited to go to the fourth grade. In the 11th grade, we're excited to end at 12, right? Aren't we? And then if we want to go to school again, we start school again, and we start, and we start, and we start, and you become a junior, whatever you become, and you get there, and you're looking to graduate, aren't you? And then you get work of some kind, perhaps, and you go get a job, and you're working, and you like starting school, like starting college, like starting life, and you get it, and you got a job, and you try to play with the jobs and all of that. And when you get there, and you're looking to rest and retire, right? Aren't you? To not have to get up at X time in the morning and go to work. Yay! See? I can do what I want to do. Hurrah! See? Now, spiritually, that's why you don't do this. You're programmed to do this. You're looking to, I want to get so high in the light of people, I want to measure up, and if I feel I'm ahead, then when I'm with you over here or whatever, I feel even ahead of you, so I'm quite comfortable, quite comfortable. I want to be comfortable. And I do this. So in doing this, this is a pain in the neck. Because you never get through. 15th grade, 50th grade, 7,000th grade. When am I going to get through? What do you think? When is God going to quit? Until you become like what? Like our Lord to conform to his what? Yeah. Don't quit. I'm not like that yet. That's right. So you're going to keep going and going. And I don't like that. My world, my history, my experience is this. And I don't want to have to do this. What a pain in the neck that is. You got to dress, you got to be this, you got to do that. We don't have to do that anymore. I want to be like this. And that's what rubs us, because God will never back off. In fact, actually, I did another one back there. Worthy of doing it, these illustrations. You know, there's a pushing, a wonderful pushing that God always does it. He never quits. Do you remember when the Lord sent the Lord Jesus into the wilderness? Luke 4:1, he drove him, the Spirit of God drove him into the wilderness. I mean, he didn't walk him in hand in little steps. He literally shoved him into the wilderness. Threw him into the wilderness. Well, that's what God does with you if you let him. And that's what you expect the church to do. What? Bang, bang, bang. Because God's doing it. Why? Because you won't grow. Now, if I can use my illustration for good or bad here. How do I do that without the mic? In the process, I'm going to use the hymn book. If you go, and here you are, and here's the world around you, and you compare yourself with others, etc., and you do that, then here you are. I'll leave you alone if you leave me alone, okay? And we do that. So in the process, we have this going, and we get along with others to the point they leave us alone and let us do what we want to do, and you want to do what you want to do. So here we are. Now, God keeps banging away. And sometimes people use that as a complaint, but it's necessary. It's all right. And they bang, 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 bang. What's the purpose? To each time to push you to where you get against here. Watch. Right here. You ready? You ready? Right here. Against here. Now what happens? Now what happens when that? Now if you push me, what's going to happen? are being pressed into what? Into here. Now, every single thing from now on only confirms and assures that I'm a here. And I've discovered I am safe. I'm pushed against the wall. I'm pushed against God. I'm not going to go anyplace else. No place else. I wouldn't have known that unless you kept doing this to get me here. And when I get here, and it keeps happening, I'm only getting stronger, straighter, because I'm only proving and getting great assurance that I'm resting, leaning against the wall. The wall's holding me. And that's what you need to understand. It has to hold you. Otherwise, you're all over the place. So, having said that, if you can, in chapter 3, if I can pick up, please, in thought, in verse 14, I'll read it again, I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it. Why? That men should fear before him. Verse 15. Remember now, that which hath been is now, and that which hath already been, God requireth what is past. So there's a great cycle going on in human life. Life keeps cycling, circling around. And in the process of circling around, it chases one event, chases the next event. And every single event is brought back to God. Every single thing has to answer to God. Every thought, word, and deed answers to God. Nothing just goes around, and every bit of it answers to God. So now when you come over to chapter 12, if I may, picking up, need to see it. So, chapter 12. And let me pick up, please, in verse 7. Then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return to God who gave it. And so here we are. When it's all said and done, I have to answer to God. I can't bypass God. Verse 8. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, all is vanity. Verse 13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment, with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. So everything is going to come. So back over to chapter 3. And if I can, in chapter 3, picking up the thought again, everything, the end of verse 15, everything is going to answer to God when the cycle is all done and history repeats itself and God requires all of history to be answered. So when we come now to verse 16, moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, that wickedness was there, and the place of righteousness, that iniquity was there. I saw the answer to right and wrong. I saw it. Verse 17. I said in mine heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked. For there is a time there for every purpose and for every work. Everything is going to find itself. History repeats itself, and yet God is going to give it all accountability. Thus in verse 18, a man dies like an animal. Seems like if that's all we are, then we should just enjoy life. But is that all we are? Is that all we are as an animal? To find enough food, enough something? No, that isn't true. Verse 18. For I said in mine heart, concerning the estate of the sons of men, that God might manifest them, that they might see that they themselves are beasts, animals. And apart from God, animals are better off than we are. Animals enjoy being animals. Humans can't enjoy being humans without God. How are you going to be a human without God? So, verse 19. For that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beast, Even every thing befalleth them, as one dieth, so dieth the other. Yea, they all have one breath, so that a man hath no preeminence above a beast, for all is vanity. There's no advantage. Verse 20. All go into one place, all are of the dust, and all turn to dust again. So all the animals go to dust like we are. Verse 21. Who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward, and the spirit of the beast that goeth downward to the earth? Therefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion, for who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? In other words, we might as well eat, drink, and be merry, because when it's all said and done, we have been lied to about the truth. God, we have tried to make something on earth equal to be substitute for you. And there is no substitute for you, God, none whatsoever. And we have kidded ourselves and been hoodwinked that we could go and make work, home, school, play, coming, going. We could make that good enough. We were lied to. We were deceived. We thought we could do it without you. God, we can't. We can't do it without you. There's no substitute for you. And if I can, in closing, just think of King Solomon. King Solomon, you remember the illustration God uses of the prodigal son. The prodigal son had everything. He wanted his share, fair share, to go out and use it outside of the family, outside. And out he went, out to make his name for himself. And as he went out to make a name for himself out there, in the process, he discovered that the world, politically, educationally, everywhere, wasn't going to treat him as King Kong or something. And here he is out there, and he gets to where he has the husk, and he is feeding. He's no better off than the pigs. In fact, the pigs are better off, because pigs are pigs. And here he is trying to feed the pigs in the pig pen, eating the husk, etc., as food. And here's King Solomon. King Solomon, what did you do? What are you trying to tell us, King Solomon? I tried the husk. And the husk never replaced God. I got to go back home to God, to God. In all my wisdom, I've discovered, God, there's no substitute for you. None whatsoever. Anyway, I trust that helped a little bit. Thank you.